move to something related to my field in media, and that is to look at the most public form of interaction, really, I think, between the Western world and the Middle East, which is right now satellite television and video cassettes. There's more traffic, intellectual, emotional, material, any kind of human traffic you can talk about it, between our brains, our culture, their culture, through modern media than any other form. And a slice of that is relating very clearly to our identity as Christians and how we are perceived over there, especially by Muslims. So I want to pay some attention to that phenomenon of media and set it within the question that we have as Christians about what is our mission in the world. I'm a missionary's son, I've been a missionary myself, and Matthew 28 is often, you know, given as the key text, go ye therefore, teach all nations, baptizing them, the great commission of the disciples at the end of Jesus' ministry. That is often spoken of as if it's sufficient for all of our interaction. And that's on that basis we go out into the world and make disciples of all nations. I'd like to talk about our interaction with the Middle East in the light of Matthew 28 and in the light of a competing text in that part of the world, I think, which is really the great commandment, love the Lord your God, etc., etc., Mark 12. And sort of try to play off a little bit this great commission versus great commandment as it relates to us and the way we should relate to the Middle East. We try to penetrate Islam and Muslims in various ways at the present time. I'm just going to be speaking about the media mission, the media evangelism that's going on, and some parts we've had to play in as ELC of missionaries in the region and my own work there with the Christians of the region. But also, I think it's important to say before we speak about that there is a typical missionary presence as well. I'm not sure of the total numbers, but there are probably over 1,000 Western missionaries in the Middle East at the present time. And the vast majority of them are from fundamentalist churches in this country who feel like they are penetrating the bastion of Islam, and they're going to win Muslims for Christ by hook or by crook. And to do it in many countries, you have to go under a false identity. You have to go as a businessman, as an English teacher, as an engineer, and then you have to try to gather somebody in your house at night or in some other place after dark or when nobody will notice and try to spread the word of God in that manner. And you end up compromising many, many things about an open and honest relationship of your faith in the effort to convert people. There's even groups that have gone dressed as Muslims, and Muslim holy men with long white gowns, and worked their way into fundamentalist Islamic groups in Egypt to try to understand these people and win them over for Christ. And it's a great, great industry. If you want to pick up a mission magazine sometime, it's phenomenal, the efforts that are being put into this. And it by far represents the largest amount of Western Christian presence in the region. To put the bottom line on it, from my point of view, and feel free to argue with anything I'm saying, the kind of Christians that are there are the worst kind of Christians to be there. But sadly enough, a church like the LCA, which knows better, has 6 people in the Middle East. I was one of them, now they have 5. I think they're replacing me with somebody else. Where is our mission spirit to go there with a Mark 12 commission? A love the Lord your God, love your neighbor as yourself commission, rather than a Matthew 28 commission, which is sort of an imperialist conquering commission, which suits very well with our way of interaction with the world. That's a quick lunch.
Yeah. The middle part of the Great Commission verse is teaching them to obey everything that I commanded you. We always forget about that part of the Great Commission.
Right. All right, we're making disciples.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not going to spend time on these missionaries that are there. As I say many times, sometimes as tent makers, as almost as spies. We have a friend who's leading a group through North Africa right now for operational mobilization. And it's passed off as a tourism group, but their real purpose is to kind of get the lay of the land, almost like Joshua and the Canaanites, you know, try to figure out a way to come in and take this place somehow for Jesus. I want you to be aware of that, because that's really, like I say, the strongest Christian presence is not a savvy Christian presence. It's a very imperialist Christian presence in the region at the present time. A gift to the fundamentalist Muslims, who it's exactly what they expect us to do in their part of the world. What I want to talk about is the media effort which goes with that. And that media effort, maybe I can introduce it with a couple stories. I was at a conference of evangelical media people who were probably not that happy, some of them, to see me, because I represented the Middle East Council of Churches, I represented a church to ELCA, which wouldn't be there otherwise. But it's important to keep open the channels to these people who are professionals and Christians at the same time, and God will judge, you know, their labors over against other people's and do the right thing. So I listened to the debate, and a very strong case was made by one person who was a vice president for the Christian Broadcasting Network, Pat Robertson's group. He was fresh back from a very successful multimedia crusade, which had been carried out in Central America and in the former Soviet Union. This was after Soviet Union had fallen, and Russia was now open, as it is very much under siege by Western missionary groups who are going in there and trying to make real Christians out of them. Never mind the Orthodox Church is already there. Let's make real Christians. This guy was talking about the success of their media campaign, and these are some of his words. They would come to a country in Central America, Nicaragua, San Salvador, and Guatemala, I believe, were the three target countries. And he spoke of 1 million recorded salvation experiences in each of those countries after a month's work. And the month was spent on billboards, handouts, radio programs, television programs, television ads, rallies, everything they could think of as a way to get out the good news to these people. And then they go door to door, and they would ask people what the effect was. And he showed us a little video clip of one of the house calls that were the culmination of this month-long crusade by the 700 Club, CBN, Pat Robertson's group. And you saw this Nicaraguan peasant woman coming to the door to answer where this guy's knocking. And the exchange takes about 10 seconds. He says, "Do you love Jesus?" She says, yeah, I love Jesus." "Okay." Recorded some. "Did you see the program?" There was one question first. "Did you see that such and such a program? Do you love Jesus?" "Okay, done." And that was how they got to their million. They did the same thing in the Soviet Union. They got 3 million recorded salvation experiences. Now, those were his words, recorded salvation experiences. At the same conference was an Orthodox church worker who has worked for many years with the Lutheran Layman's League, the Lutheran Hour, the Missouri Synod Media Ministry, which has done wonderful work in many, many places. But in the Middle East, they've been going 30 years, and they get a little nervous now because they don't have much to show for it. Lutheran churches have not sprouted across the landscape like, you know, mountain spring flowers as a result of this ministry over 30 years. And their main broadcaster is an Orthodox person because they didn't have any Lutherans who could speak Arabic or from the region to do the work. And he had the guts to say in this conference of high-powered Western evangelical missionary, leading missionaries, he had the guts to say in a discussion group about how to relate to Islam that he believed that in 30 years of broadcasting, he had never converted a single Muslim. And it was a statement that took enormous amount of guts, because he's paid by these people to essentially convert Muslims, and that's why he's there. And he had the guts to say in a public forum that he believed he had never converted a single one. He said, "Educated them maybe, told them things they wouldn't otherwise be able to hear, spoken up, brought them points of view they don't get in their own in the mosque from the Sheikh on Friday. maybe open their eyes to the world, maybe share something of the sense of the gospel and improve their image of Christianity and of Christians, but convert them? No. And the people in the room who are all gringos like me just could not accept this man's comment. Because it pulls the rug out from everything that they believe and every way that they raise money back here. And so the man was sort of on thin ice immediately. And I saw him 6 months later getting raked over the road by his, called by his boss for exactly this kind of thing. And the boss was ending up with staff members who would say, yes, we'll convert Muslims for you. Because it becomes the task is so impossible, it's so unreal, it's such a mismatch of our technology and a warped sense of mission and the way that God made the human heart, which is full of choice and full of questions and full of doubts and full of need for love and relationships and a living ministry, not a dead, disembodied, technological kilowatt ministry. So that's one picture of this world that I say is leaning very heavily on the Middle East.
Is the major problem in converting Muslims that they are so full of their own strong religious beliefs that they do not allow the room for Christianity?
Yeah, the sociological obstacles are enormous. You know, to become a Christian, you basically have to forsake everything. Your culture, your family, your community, your place.
So then maybe education is the first step.
Right, and media can do that.
It may take 100 years.
Right.
They've been trying
for 100 years, and what they've basically done is converted. They've stolen Orthodox, lax Orthodox. They haven't converted Muslims much. There are a few cases where it has happened. But it really raises a question for us and for our sense that God really does have the truth, our God, and that we need to share that truth. It really, really puts you on the spot, and there's no more challenging focus, I think, than for anybody with a missionary spirit, an evangelical spirit, which I certainly, you know, believe that I have, than to think of how this gospel, like it says in the chapel, we have this treasure, you know, how can that be shared? And it's got to be shared in the clay jars of the life that we lead among them. And in the missionary presence in the Middle East, there are some really interesting models. The Mennonites, you know, the cousins of the Hutterites who are here. The Mennonite Central Committee has people all over the world. In the Middle East, they just go there and they pick up a duty that is worthy. They might run a media resource library on the West Bank with good videos in it, for example. Or they might be teaching English in Cairo. They do something worthy and uncontroversial in the community, something wholesome. And they let that be a ministry of presence among the Muslims. And they're satisfied with that very humble outcome.
Powerful.
Powerful, but humble. And it certainly doesn't sell, you know, big back here. It can be supported by a Mennonite church, which is very devoted to short-term volunteer programs overseas. They have enormous numbers of people overseas. The Mennonites, with 750,000 people, do more in relief and development than the Lutherans, with 10 times as many people, because of this commitment to a ministry of presence and the taking seriously of a peaceful interaction with the rest of the world. And it's quite a remarkable thing in the Middle East to see their approach compared to these Western evangelicals who think of it as a market that needs to be conquered, and thank God that God has given us now satellites and we can do it properly. Yeah.
I remember hearing it, I guess, they're talking about higher appeals, and they said, you know, Lutherans raise, you would know better than I do.
$2.50 a
head. Yeah. And the Mennonites is at 40?
Yeah.
$40,000, and that sounds a lot.
Yeah.
The Mennonites are groups of kind of authentic Christianity, and their presence or their ministry is being subverted by the enormous, you know, inauthentic Christianity, the evangelicals. Mm-hmm. That gives Christianity bad name.
Yeah.
It reduces trade.
Yeah.
So, I can see why they hate us. You know, they don't get that coercive Christianity right over their head.
Yeah.
And gives us a bad name.
Mennonites are well suited to go head to head with the Muslims. Because they have the spirit, I think, that will speak through life and word and action and the word, you know. Take this Bible and eat it, you know.
It's more servanthood.
Yeah, servanthood, a ministry of servanthood, of presence, of conversation, of dialogue, of struggle, rather than success and victory and numbers.
You know, I don't mean to get too far off the field, but this is what I see as well. Do you know Family Radio and their efforts at giving Bibles to Moscow, and now they're going and giving Bibles and tracts in India?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how you see that. To me, to listening to it, it sounds like a successful effort.
Yeah.
Certainly not a long-term effort, but people going over, handing out the Bibles.
And Brother Andrew with these Open Doors, going to the persecuted church.
You know, I hesitate to tear them down because of their good motivations and things like that, but I think that they really have to ask themselves, you know, what is a Bible without a living presence behind it? You know, God didn't come as a book. He came as a person, and we try to put him into a book.
But the word is living.
It is living, but it has to be living. You know, it's just too simple. It's too simplistic.
Isn't it better than that?
Maybe, but, you know, there are Bibles in Russia. The Orthodox Church has been there for 1,000 years.
And if it does harm, it really sets us back.
I'd say go there and do something that doesn't try to sell them your brand of Christianity, but proves that you love them. And that's where I want to come to this Great Commandment as a much better mission statement than Great Commission. Those guys are Great Commission from start to finish. You know,
they ignore the part that says, teach them of everything that I commanded you. They only use that first phrase to quote that text.
Yeah. You know, I actually respect James Dobson. I think he does a lot. That's Family Radio, right?
Camping. Harold Camping.
Oh, sorry. I'm thinking of James Dobson.
Oh, this is Harold Camping. He has a radio up in Glendale, California.
But again, radio ought to be made where it's heard. It shouldn't be made in a distant. It's not a transnational. If you want to do something with people's lives, let them speak. Let them be part of it. Let them struggle with the issues and come to their own. Let them participate in the message. Don't cook the message up in California and put it in the tower and beam it over there. If you expect to have an impact on their lives and on this question of free choice that, you know, that is related to conversion. If you want to educate them, fine. You know, the LWF, Lutheran World Federation, had a great radio station in Addis Ababa. And the formula was 70% education and entertainment, 30% gospel. But earn the right to be heard in any culture. And all the programs were made in the countries, in the language groups where they were being heard. So the Nigerian programs were made in Nigeria, the Tanzanians in Tanzania. And this thing went for about 15 years, and then the Marxist government took it over. And it became Radio Voice of the Revolution instead of Radio Voice of the Gospel. But it was a wonderful example of an attempt to make media not let the tail wag the dog, you know, let the media do what it can do. And this example stopped in 1974, but the theories of it are practiced in different ways, and there's great community radio stations around the place which exemplify this. But let me tell you another little window on this world of Western media. We were editing this program here with a Palestinian crew. You know, my job was to work with locals in ways to help them tell their story in the West. And we went and visited the people who had been shot during the Intifada in Palestine, who got emergency care. They did get the bullets taken out of them. There's a Christian doctor in this who did that on his spare time. He'd come on vacation from Jordan and take bullets out of people for a month in the West Bank. But what happened to them a year later, 2 years later, 3 years later? We went around and visited five people and tried to find out where they were. And in four of the five cases, it was pretty sad, including an 11-year-old boy who took a bullet right in his head. It was pretty sad. One of the five cases was really fighting back. We're editing this. It's a Saturday, Shabbat, the holy day for the Israelis. We're in an Israeli studio because we needed their equipment. They rented it to us, no problem. The equipment broke down, and we had to ask the owner to come and help us. He came in the minute Shabbat was over, you know, the sundown on the Sabbath. He came right in, fixed the equipment for us, and we kept on working that night. Next morning, we're still working. And the Israeli technician who helped us turned at one point from the screen as we just saw this Israeli soldier shooting a Palestinian. And he said, you know, I was an army officer in Ramallah, one of the main West Bank towns, for 6 months at the beginning of the Intifada. And he said, we didn't know what we were doing. He said, we were told to do this, we had to do this. It was like we were going through some kind of a black comedy. And the Palestinian editor sitting next to him said to him, you know, I'm from Ramallah, and we didn't know what we were doing either. We were going through a black comedy. We had to do what we were doing, you had to do what you had. This sort of absurdity of war coming down to the human level at that point in a little project. Well, right next door was the Israeli cable company for West Jerusalem. And I was real curious to see what they had coming off of the sky on a Sunday morning. We go in there and there's one of these fancy screens that has 35 mini screens in it. You know, they have it all divided up like a matrix. I guess you have it on your cables. I don't have cable at home on purpose, but this is how they do it, right? And of the 70 choices, you could see the little icon window to show you what to choose on channels 1 through 70. What struck me most was there were 5 Western males. Nice Western waspish males. They were all preaching. Pat Robertson, Schuller, Swaggart, a guy named Cirillo, who I don't think he's gotten here. He's in Europe doing his damages over there. And another guy. 5 Western males preaching. Holy man. Sunday morning. And on another 5 channels next to that, there were 5 Western females naked. In movies. There were 5 movies running. And they were movies, soft porn, done by whoever. B-movies. And the Western women on the screen in Israel that morning were semi-naked or naked. You know, there was some kind of a sex film going on, soft porn. And the Western men were preaching. And I just switched over into Islam. And I thought to myself, what impression does this make? How is this seen? Is this the West's offering to the Middle East? This part of the world where we have perpetrated already the Crusades, where we go over and pound on Iraq and the Iraqi people and keep the sanctions on it for 4 years now because they tried to take a little more of our oil that we somehow live by, this drug that we're addicted to as a culture, a civilization. The strength of the clash between the two worlds is pretty stunning. And you sit there and watch TV in a hotel in the Middle East, and the same thing happens every time. I watched a guy, I never heard of him before, Maury Posey, Povich. I was sitting in Beirut, Lebanon, in the neighborhood where Hezbollah is strong. Their area started right beside my hotel. And I was flicking, surfing around here, and found this guy. Every guest that morning was a daughter who had found their mother in bed with someone who wasn't their father. That was your criteria for being a guest that morning. And this is, I can look across the street and see the mosque. And I can see the Hezbollah people. They call themselves the Party of God. Why? Because they're dead serious about their religion. You know, it's welled up inside them and made them determine their whole life to really live what they believe. And there are wonderful quotes from Muslim fundamentalists who speak the truth, who say, if you would give us your education, if you would give us the best of your culture, your learning, what you know about this world that God has made, welcome to our region. But what do you give us? Your sex, your materialism, and your violence. Not once, not twice, but how many channels are possible now? This is the 500 channel universe. Or the part that's going to get to the Middle East, it just doesn't add up in any way that's going to make any sense. And it can only add fuel to the fire of fundamentalism, of crazy nationalism on that part of the world. To bring it around a little bit to our concerns as Christians, I want to just suggest that if we take the Great Commission, yikes, that one's dead. If we take the Great commandment, you know, which says, Mark 12, and we draw kind of a continuum, and we take the Great Commission over here, Matthew 28, and we think in terms of this media coming to that part of the world, there is a kind of an option here to make a dichotomy out of it. On the one hand, I would like to argue, if you have a chance for a kairos, if we're Christians and we believe the Word of God and Jesus was asked what the greatest commandment is, he speaks of loving the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, loving your neighbor as yourself. And if we go about our life with that in mind, we look for, perhaps, or we are touched by kairos moments, moments of special meaning, special encounter with our fellow human beings. There's a chance of kairos. If we go too far overboard with a kind of a, we have the truth God has given us, and by Jove, we're going to give it to those guys any way we can. Thank God for modern media and all that we can do with those things to touch these millions of Muslims whom we can't meet personally because their societies are closed. Therefore, we have to get to them through the air, from the skies, through the satellites. There's a lot of room there for confrontation, very much the opposite of kairos. And the question, I think, is, what's the mix? Of course, this is a wonderful text. My own father went to the mission field as a young man, as a pastor, and spent his whole life there. I followed in his footsteps to a degree. I hope I still am, and I take this very seriously. But I think in the Middle East, it comes into some kind of a balance between this approach, which is rather, I would say, imperialistic, or can be mistaken that way, and this approach, which is much more relational, and perhaps closer to the heart of the gospel and more central to what we're talking about. Where do we place that ourselves along that continuum if we try to think in terms of this media? And if you've got, you know, questions or thoughts on that, please interrupt me anytime. Just to pay a little bit of attention to this Mark 12 text before we get into it. You know the story where the scribe comes and asks Jesus what the greatest commandment is, and Jesus gives that answer, and then the scribe reaffirms what Jesus said by saying God is one, and beside him there is no other. And that phrase, we have to really spend a little bit of time absorbing that. He is one, and beside him there is no other, because that is really the bedrock of the Christian faith. Going back into the Jewish faith, I mean, Judeo-Christian tradition starting from this sense of monotheism. I mean, what's so special about Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, the monotheism, at the most basic level? And here's the statement, you know, the ten words, the sound bite. The answer Jesus gave is real media stuff, because it is a sound bite. There is no God but God. What is that phrase? There is no God but God. That's the Muslim. The first statement of faith by a Muslim is there is no God. We translate there is no God but Allah, which is garbage because Allah means God. So by saying there is no God but Allah, we're putting it already over into a weird category. What they mean is there is no God but God. And it's exactly the same statement made by Jesus, made by the scribe, as the basic confession of faith. And it's a point at which we are not separate from Muslims. Are we? And it's a tough one. You know, are they talking about the same God we are or not? And, you know, after a lot of struggling, I basically have to say, I don't think they are. I don't think it helps us at all to say that they are. I think we have to take them at their word the way we would help they would take us at our word when we speak in faith. And Jesus' answer to this scribe from the Great Commandment is something which echoes around that region in the present day. Yeah, Bill?
Well, I think you've answered my question, I think. I view the God of the Jews, the Christians, and the Muslims to be the same God.
Mm-hmm.
I,
I didn't grow up thinking that. I really thought ours was the same as the Jews, but we really had the only one true God. And
because don't Muslims accept Christ as a prophet?
Yeah, absolutely.
Kabbalah.
Absolutely. He's one of the greatest prophets.
So this is something we're kind of need out there. This,
right.
Nobody's really...
No. It
the definitive spin on
it. It takes us off into the whole question.
Is one of the... Isn't that partly where the problem comes from?
Yeah. Right, absolutely. We've got a lot of problems with him, but do we have a problem with this? Are we, when we say there is no God but God, the first commandment of the Ten Commandments, the first of the great commandment, is that the same statement as the basic Muslim profession? There is no God but God, and Muhammad is his prophet.
And part of the problem comes in leaving out the tradition and the cultural things that come in
right. That
are man-made
right. And
become rock solid.
Yeah.
Well, within Christianity, we certainly have enough cultures to put an interpretation on Christianity to make us almost as different from one another as we are from Muslims.
Well, and we have, in some senses, almost made Christianity anti-Jewish rather than
right. True
Israelis.
Right.
We don't need to say much of that.
This common ground between us and the Jews, between us and the Muslims, is untrammeled. It's like the tundra up in the mountains that you're not supposed to step on. I mean, there's not much, no, not very many people are walking on it. There are little efforts in the Middle East around that. What do we have in common? And there's some wonderful books about it. But as a basis for action, it's pretty unexplored, and I think it's got a lot of potential for us. And it certainly has a lot of instruction for us in terms of media, where you have to make a disembodied witness to people. And you have to ring true to them without having the chance of a relationship, what you're going to put into your media, and how you're going to minister through the media, how you're going to evangelize. Notice when Jesus answers that, what the power of his answer is, all lesser commandments are put in their place. You know, this is the commandment, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and mind. And I think all of our offerings, all of our sacrifices, in any region of the world, in any culture, are put into their proper place too. Those things we hold so dear, we sometimes raise up and make into an idol that challenges God. That is also put back down. And I would say here is a little bit of a nod towards Matthew 28. There, it's possible for us in missions to take the Great Commission as almost as an idol. You know, how can the Word of God become an idol? But I believe it can. I believe in the same sort of sense that Lutherans' concern with theology, good theology, has a certain idolatry to it, which rises up and squelches out something else which is more fundamental. And there is no God but God, and love your neighbor as yourself, keeps that in some kind of perspective. The first one of the two commandments in the Great Commandment centers us on God alongside our Jewish and Muslim sisters and brothers. And the second one calls us forth in love, in neighborly love, and reminds us what it means to be a Christian. And in the Middle East, if you hear that great commandment, you ask the question, well, who is my neighbor? Just like the gospel question. And your answer is, your neighbor is a Muslim. The people who believe in the one God the same way you do, at its root, at its base. So you start from that sort of perspective. And it's a very different entry point than saying, this is the fortress of Islam, the boogeyman of Islam that's replacing communism, you know, Muslim fanaticism and so on, and fundamentally replacing communism as the main enemy we see in the world out there. It's a totally different starting point than what we would come to if we just come from a very good-minded, but very interventionist and expansionist view of the gospel that we have associated with missionary work. So in the Middle East, who is my neighbor? 200 million Muslims. 12 to 14 million Christians, the ones I spoke about the first two sessions. And then maybe 4 to 5 million Jewish people. Those are your neighbors in the Middle East. And how do you relate to them in media? Well, Pat Robertson has a channel called Middle East Television. And it has a wonderful story behind it, or a horrible story behind it. When Israel invaded Lebanon in 1980, they conquered Lebanon up to Beirut, And there was a television station sitting in the south of Lebanon near the Israeli border that the troops took. And within, I think, days, but maybe at least weeks, the 700 Club and its people were in there negotiating to take over that television station and to make it a Christian beachhead in the Middle East. They couldn't do it on Israel proper because the Israelis are pretty uncomfortable with these nuts who are their allies in this country, especially they were at that time. But here, CBN had the chance to do it in South Lebanon. So they took this thing over, called it Middle East Television, and have been broadcasting ever since. The gospel, according to CBN, is the 700 Club, dubbed into Arabic. Have any of you ever watched the 700 Club? Do you know about Pat Robertson's views of Israel and of Zionism and of Arabs and Palestinians? You ever heard him talk about Palestinians? I watched him shortly after the peace agreement started with the White House lawn, and the guy was just trying his darndest not to have to say anything nice about the Palestinians, even though they had, you know, taken this step that he has to support as some kind of a Christian. But they're sitting there pumping out TV stations in the Middle, TV programs in the Middle East, and their version of loving their neighbors, if we take them at their word for that, is to tell about the gospel using secondhand pictures and using foreign language dubbed into somebody else's programs, Christian programs. That is their version of evangelism in the region. I asked one of them, how do you think you can share the gospel from Israeli-occupied southern Lebanon to other Arabs in the region, to Arabs in the region, to Palestinians, to Lebanese, to anybody who would be upset by the fact that Israel took them? And the manager's answer to me, he lived on Cyprus with us, his answer was, oh, they don't know we're there. We use a Nicosia address. Nicosia is in Cyprus. All the mail gets sent to Cyprus. So their front office, their address says Cyprus. The station is in Israeli-occupied southern Lebanon. And he said, they don't know we're there. Well, that's an incredible joke.
Can't they find out? I mean,
everybody knows they're there. Everybody knows they're there. But that's what they would tell people back here. And he answered me as an American with the same answer that they give back here. But it all goes by way of saying that, you know, the Christian mission, I think, is not something that you can do with subterfuge. You know, if you've got a hidden agenda, it's going to show. And in that part of the world, it's going to show quicker and harder and have more consequences than probably anywhere else.
Do you have a dialogue with those people? Because the Bible does say that if you have something against a Christian brother, talk to him in private.
Yeah.
Is there a dialogue between ELCA and CBN?
Yeah. Not ELCA and CBN. There's not enough connection. But in the Middle East, between the Middle East Council of Churches and evangelicals in the region, there's been quite an interesting dialogue going on. The media folks have been the slowest to come into it, the media folks on the evangelical side. They've been the slowest to come into it. But I'm going to read you some portions of a paper on this topic in a minute. And CBN showed up at that conference for a while. They didn't stay to the end, but they did come for about a day and a half. And they heard things they've never heard from local people who are addressing this very question of what is a Christian presence on the airwaves of the Middle East. You know, CBN is effectively putting, through that terrestrial station, but then also through the satellite, they're putting Pat Robertson right next to that naked woman. And, you know, TV is a surfing medium. I mean, you click, 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 click. And to do that in a region where God is all-powerful, almighty, and revered in a way that we don't even appreciate is an amazing tactic on their part. I think it has to be remembered that what it's coming with, it's coming with all those other Western media products. That's what they're pumping out.
You know, I just don't like to see Christians even criticize other Christians very much because we are human beings and fuck that we believe in the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
This was an enormous first step. We're not where we want to be, but we need to keep the common ground, even among Christians, in the forefront. We need to be friends with our Christian church.
I think we need to discern what our impact is to people that we don't know, so that we can be effective and be discerning of what we're saying to other people, so that we can be heard with the message of Christ's love.
And the message from the religious right, though, is sham Christianity. That's sham Christianity, and it needs to be said. We have to call it the religious right, not the Christian right. They say so far away from the Sermon on the Mount, and I think what Jesus actually says and does, you know, they don't even quote Jesus.
My own struggle with what you're saying, I can't remember your name.
Here.
No, but the lady
Jane,
in front.
Jane.
Was really to try to relate personally to these people. You know, the man that gave me that silly answer about where they were located. I mean, I kept talking to him over the years, gone to the meetings, and he's heard, he knows what I think. I know what he thinks, and we still keep in relationship. But I can't defend for a minute what he's doing with his money that he raises and how they're doing it, what the effect of it is. I just can't.
I'm really just raising questions. Yeah. And I don't mean, but this is what's on my mind right now.
Yeah.
Now, hearing a response that helps me to grow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I'd like to come to the question a little bit more focused of what some alternatives to this kind of media are. But if we look at it as part of the whole phenomenon, which it is, of Western media expansion. And remember, our biggest export as Americans is not cars or computers or whatever you might think. It's culture, if you call it that.
Yeah.
It's you know, I Dream of Jeannie is reverberating around the planet and will be forever. I mean, everything we've ever made is out there being bought cheaply by every country that needs to fill the time on their channels. It's much cheaper than to buy a well-produced Hollywood rerun than to make even a simple local program. And these are the horrible economics of big media, which lead me to be terribly regulatory in my own philosophy about it. I mean, I think we need a few channels that should be strictly controlled and turn the rest off.
Well, the irony about a lot of... The irony there also is that Pat Robertson's company owns so many of those TV programs that are in syndication. We bought the Family Network or something like that.
Yeah.
He owns all, I'm sure he owns I Dream of Jeannie and all of these shows that, that, so he's getting the profits off of that from being circulated around the world.
And, you know, those people that I have trouble with are dragging the name of Christ right into that cesspool. And yet they're the ones who are trying to witness to Christ in the Muslim world. It's just the most absurd combination you can imagine.
But I mean, really, as we support war and we support killing people, we witness to them in the most horrible way as well. But we're still working
right.
on ourselves. We're still working on our approach. We're still working on progress.
Right. And I think, you know, the discussion has to go beyond criticism to what form of mission. How do we generate a mission based on this? And I want to come to that in this paper as I could get my hands on it. But just twist the screw one more time here because of what's coming in with this media gospel. Remember that you bring in our kind of sex on media to the Muslim world. You're bringing it to a place with the most traditional purity and consciousness, and look how the women dress, you know? You can't even look at a woman who's not your wife. You can't see her skin. And we bring in this garbage, and we, as tourists, I mean, I've seen Americans walking around in the holy sites with hot pants on, with everything hanging out in all directions, and they're right next to a Muslim woman. You wonder who has the morality, which culture has got what to say to the other one.
Right.
And this is what comes in now, right into the homes, because of direct broadcast satellites. You know, you need a little tiny dish, and you can get 30 of these channels right off of one satellite.
They're just like they're going up to Mass. I mean, friends of mine in the Catholic Church in America, I mean, they have to go to Mass 5:30 Saturday night. You know, the women would just love everything.
Yeah.
And this is very normal to them.
Right.
You know,
Well, there's some kind of a disconnect there. And if we got it in this country, that's one thing. If we export it, that's another thing. Yeah, another area, just to hit it on the head, unabashed celebrations of wealth and power as we have in soap operas. In a part of the world where very few are wealthy and very few have any power at all, what does that do to their mindset? You know, you watch Dynasty.
The World Trade Center.
Yeah, makes you want to bomb the World Trade Center, exactly. And then non-stop violence in a region that we accuse of being violent, but in a region where any one of you women can walk around in downtown Cairo at 2 o'clock in the morning and you'll be 50 times safer than you would be in New York City. Maybe a silly thing to do if there's a crazy person out there who thinks, well, here's somebody all alone. I mean, it's not, you're not totally safe, but my sense for these cities in the Middle East is they are safe. People know how to behave. And yet, we accuse them of being a violent region, of Muslims being violent, and we're pumping in this stuff. All the murders, how many murders are your kids watching by the time they're 15? Well, that stuff is going out there day after day after day in waves to regions that have a little bit of common sense left from traditional ways of life, I think, and are trying to keep that. In other words, these messages about sex, violence, materialism are totally overpowering the message of Christ if we entrust it to this incredibly vulnerable medium of transnational television and does no one a service if we're concerned about the gospel values behind it. So the Middle East Council of Churches, and part of my work there was to try to get together a conference. Part of what we did was try to get together a conference to invite these Western evangelicals, to invite Middle Eastern Christians, and to sit down and say, what should be done in the name of Christ through these media? And the whole conference took on a special urgency because not only is Pat Robertson coming in from across the Atlantic and from that terrestrial station, but another group called Middle East Media is trying to put together a Christian satellite channel for the Middle East. And they've been there long enough that they know that they need to have Middle Eastern guidance in it. And they need to have Middle Eastern produced programs in it, because there's a great lack of anything produced by anybody who even knows Arabic for that part of the world. So we had this conference in October of last year and tried to raise up some of these issues, and turned out to be a pretty packed 3 days. And I'll read you some parts of a paper from that conference around this theme of the Great Commandment, the Middle East Media, and the Great Commission. One night a foreigner listened to a group of Jordanians describing a TV channel that they watched. It became clear that they knew much about the station and its programming. Their interest centered around sports and movies they could not otherwise see. They were familiar with religious programs on the channel, but did not usually watch them. When questioned, they said politely that these programs weren't for them, even though they were proud to call themselves Christians. When told that these programs were part of a ministry that hoped to help people become Christians, their reaction was genuine and incredulous laughter. Faith, they said, could never be established by such a superficial means as television. They wondered aloud, who would ever think that it could? Honey, do you need me?
No.
Okay. In the Middle East, God is not set by society to be dead. And this is not time to get into it, but remember, the Enlightenment basically killed God. The Enlightenment in the West basically decided that man didn't need God and killed him off. The Middle East never went through the Enlightenment. So they never said God was dead. He's still alive there. He's alive and he's greater than all else, far greater. What does Allahu Akbar mean? God is greater. You know, the next most important saying in Islam is Allahu Akbar, and that means God is greater. That's where you start. There is only one God, the God, and God is greater than everything else that we think about. He's transcendent, the All-Holy One, the Creator and Lord of the universe. We don't have to go any farther. What we've already said is sufficient. The three Abrahamic religions, these three monotheistic religions that come from Abraham, share a profound sense of God. God is so great in the Middle East that the majority religion of the region, Islam, has tried to deny human media any chance of debasing him. When you go to a mosque, there's no representation of God. It's forbidden. A little bit like the Hutterite church we saw the other day. You know, they don't want to try to put God up there either. He's too big for that, or she. All right? Islamic has denied human media the chance to portray God. He may not be represented or pictured. Christianity has usually settled for a trade-off between the potential of imagery and the danger of idolatry. But here too, in Christianity, the icons have been smashed. The Semitic I am is the first and the last word on the subject of God. What then is Christian media in the Middle East? It must fear and love God. Here at least, the God who is will not fit in the box. If Christians from other cultures have put him in a box, put him in television, that's their problem. Their packaged God should not be exported, marketable though they may think he is. The Middle East is the source and the center of the three great monotheistic religions of the world. Whatever is done in the name of religion here must stand in the presence of three faiths and one God. Whatever is done in the name of Christian religion in the Middle East must honor the one true God, and if for no other reason than his love, must have a generous respect for people of Jewish and Muslim faith. We hear anew Jesus' great commandment. By the same commandment, what one Christian does here must respect what other Christians do as well. They are neighbors, but different from oneself, speaking here between Western Christians and Middle Eastern Christians, who have as much to separate them sometimes as perhaps we do from Muslims. Satellite broadcasting cannot escape these Middle Eastern realities of God and religion. Though satellites span the heavens, their challenge is on earth. Here, where humankind first ate the fruit of evil and of good, God showed forbearance and love. His gift of free choice was not withdrawn. It still stands. Religion broadcast across the skies by satellite must also respect the freedom of choice that God has given on earth. Not everyone will be able to laugh at the self-appointed crusaders of the airwaves, like those people in Jordan who laughed when I said that that channel was out there to convert them. Some will be offended, some misled, and others vindicated in their prejudices. Rather, Christian broadcasting must forbear and love as patiently as Jesus did. He did not target people groups with miracles and win them for God. His miracles flowed from his presence in the struggles of life. He healed people. They saw his love. They had to decide about him for themselves. In order to fulfill the great commandment, Christian broadcasting by satellite in the Middle East must be conceived and sustained through the participation of those most affected, the audience. To do so is good communication and good theology combined. Christians who work in media in the Middle East know that neighbors and hence audiences are mostly Muslim. Even if a Christian channel was only meant for Christians, some Muslims would watch. This is one argument kept coming up, that they would just do a channel for Christians. The point is, on satellite, everybody gets to watch what you say. Satellite TV executives may select target audiences, but their targets, neighbors, can look in on them and listen without being seen themselves. We are reminded of Jesus saying that what we hold in the privacy of our hearts is the real witness to our faith. Satellite TV projects private Christian sessions into the public domain. What does our private programming contain, especially the programming available from today's market leaders, who are all from the West? Does it convey the gospel pure and undefiled, the living word, a way of suffering and of death, a gospel that cannot be merely shown or described, but must be lived? Jesus showed us how to preach in word and deed, but we Christians are in the middle of a dilemma that began the day the first loudspeakers were used for preaching. After loudspeakers came stadiums, rallies, radio, and television. The word no longer had to be flesh, or so it seemed. The faithful can perhaps compensate for a certain amount of disembodied Christian preaching. But what about those who are not faithful and not Christian? In the end, what preachers preach, they must also live out with their listeners. The word must become flesh. Yet mass media allow us to make preaching a separate commodity. Media allow even allow some to speak of faith and promote it as the commodity. The greatest story ever told becomes the greatest commodity ever sold. Commodities need packaging to help them sell and last. What is the packaging around Christian preaching via media today? Let us keep this in mind as we discuss the best uses for mass media. and the types of programs that do justice to the truth. If you've got questions or comments or anything, please jump in here. Part of media is to be realistic and say how you pay for it, and two little sections on payment, how a satellite channel in the Middle East might function. First of all, using the electronic church. The theory of the man behind this satellite channel for the Middle East was that if he could get American electronic church folk to give 1% of what they give for the electronic church, he'd have the greatest satellite channel he could ever have. He just wanted 1% of their money. Because the electronic church in this country is a $60 billion, it's a rather large industry. And he just wanted 1% of that. It's not $60 billion, that's not right, but it's huge. Judging from media ministries around the world, the most likely source of funds for an activity like this channel would come from the so-called electronic church, which only really exists in this country, but we're trying hard to implant in other places. Yet that source shares neither common ground nor understanding with most Christians in the Middle East. The term electronic church is itself anathema to the ecclesiology and worldview in the Middle East. If the money comes from that source, any satellite channel that uses that money is going to have a hard time to be authentic. If funds are raised overseas in the same way that the electronic church raises funds, such a satellite channel will not be authentic. Money raised on the terms of the electronic church, winning Muslims and narrowing the price via new technology, is not appropriate money for such a venture. It is a temptation, but not a solution. The fact is that those who believe in transnational Christian television are already on the air here. This is regrettable, but a separate problem. To discuss their presence on the air is instructive. Does their enterprise have anything to do with the Christian witness that began here at Pentecost and lives today? No matter if such forces conquer the airwaves, God is certainly neither threatened nor mocked. He is greater. Our concern remains, is there an appropriate transnational media witness to be made by and with the Christians of the region? Another alternative for funding would be the Great American Way for media, advertising. Could you do a satellite channel for the Middle East, paying for it out of advertising? And this is another topic at the conference, and part of an introduction to that is here. Advertising is an obvious source for funding, especially when a channel has an established audience. If there's 14 million Christians, they don't have much of their own identity, and many of them want a channel like this as a sort of a flagship for themselves. But what would those 14 million be able to buy, and maybe you could pay for the channel that way? But advertising and the gospel may well be an impossible mix. Jesus cleared the temple. He did not sell space. Even for programs less important than the gospel, we must still ask the implications of relying on different types of advertising. A religious channel would still have to understand clearly, on the basis of gospel criteria, what it wanted to say and to which audiences, rejecting advertisements that inevitably compromise its stance. What examples are there of laudable programming developed from a strict advertising code? I don't know of any. But it's something we need to start asking our commercial channels.
Was there any discussion during all of this of how the Western Christians would feel if an organization with proportionately larger resources came in and started advertising across the United States airways, urging people to leave Christianity and convert to Islam?
There actually it was, because there is such a channel.
But not with the proportionate resources that the Western
No, actually more resources.
Really?
Yeah, Saudi Arabia, with all of the oil money that it no longer has, I think, they're in some kind of trouble now. But they have seen fit to put together something called MBC, Middle East Broadcasting Corporation, MBC, based out of London. And it's sort of a Saudi flagship for the world and for Islam. But when you watch it, it's a Saudi copy of CNN. And as a witness for Islam, it's a joke. It's a total joke, and any serious Muslim would totally reject it as a way to witness it, just as I'm busy rejecting this thing as a witness to Christianity. So the mechanics of the media, the dynamics of the media, in effect demonstrate exactly the thing you're asking about. Although we don't get NBC here, you can get it all over Europe. And it becomes a Saudi PR channel. They produce it in London to give it some credibility. The center is in London. But
But I just wonder, you know, like what Pat Robertson would think if,
yeah,
if the Saudi government came over here and bought,
he'd go nuts.
The television station and started broadcasting and expanding into, you know, the Saudi network.
It would blow the whistle on this purpose behind our broadcasting. If they came over with the glories of Arab civilization and all that there is to learn about the world and life, you know, a few people would watch it, it'd be interesting. But if they came over with, you know, you really should become Muslims, get smart and follow the truth.
Isn't there actually some mission work in this country by the Muslims? They're building a lot of mosques.
Yeah, I think it's based largely on, you know, meeting the needs of the immigrant population.
It's not proselytizing.
They may take a cue from us to start proselytizing.